Welcome to Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak. I'm speaking from CRU LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source, grassroots community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of the show is Life and Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. This show provides practical general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are its traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. For later on in the show, please get notebook, paper, and pen so you can take notes. Each week I start with important debt-related news, and this week we're going to go over the testimony of Elizabeth Warren, the Leo Gottlieb Professor of Law at the Harvard Law School, for the Joint Economic Committee of the United States Senate and the United States House of Representatives. And the hearing was regarding how much more can consumers be squeezed by stagnant income, skyrocketing housing costs, and falling home prices. And much of what I state here will be quotes from Professor Warren's testimony. She said the real recession began 7 years ago. From 2000 to 2007, measured in real dollars, incomes declined while basic expenses increased sharply. By the time today's family makes a few basic purchases, housing, health insurance, food, gas, phone, it has about $5,800 less than it had back in the year 2000. She said that by every measure, incomes are down. Down for fully employed males, down for fully employed females, just down for households. Adjusted for inflation, median household income has declined across America by $1,175. And it is important to note that all the economic data quoted here come from published government sources, and they're adjusted to constant $2,007 dollars to account for inflation. Looking at the data, Professor Warren said for women working full-time, incomes initially rose, then declined more sharply. With pressure on wages for both men and women, households have coped in the only way available. They have increased their workloads. More part-time workers shifted to full-time work, and both parents in two-parent households were likely to be in the workforce. Even so, from 2000 to 2007, household income registered a net loss. Of course, she continued, the problems brought on by lower annual incomes were exacerbated by rising expenses. Every American family has been looking for ways to cut expenses, but some expenses have been hard to cut. The most current story is in gasoline. Families making the same commute are spending an average of $2,195 more for gas than they did in 2000. The costs discussed here are the official figures from May 2008, omitting the most recent price shocks in the gas industry at the pumps. Increases in mortgages and mortgage costs took another big bite, $1,729 annually. A falling housing market means that many families struggling with ballooning mortgages can neither refinance nor move. They either pay or default. Increases in health insurance, food, basic telephone, and appliances knocked another $731 hole in the family budget. Increases in these unavoidable expenses, gas, mortgage, food, health insurance, appliances, and phone, mean that the average family is spending $4,655 more for this handful of basic expenses than they did in the year 2000. The burden has been even greater for working families with children. Child care costs for a child under 5 increased by $1,508, more than $125 a month. For those with an older child, the cost of after-school care increased by $622. Professor Warren continued, "All parents, regardless of the ages of their children, have watched with alarm as the cost for college spiraled upward. At a time when hundreds of thousands of good-paying blue-collar jobs have disappeared, families have seen a college diploma as their children's best chance for a secure economic future. But the costs of college keep growing. From 2000 to 2007, the net cost of state college, including scholarships and grants, increased by $1,050. So we see that the numbers tell the story. The changes in what average Americans are earning and spending. Lost income is $1,175. Higher mortgage payments, $1,729. Higher gas bills, $2,195. Higher food costs, $220. Higher phone bills for landlines, $114. Higher appliance costs, $34. Higher health insurance costs, $363. Total lost income and increased expenses, $5,830. Now, for families with children, there are even more cost increases. Increased daycare expenses, $1,508. Increased after-school care costs, $622. And increased state college costs net, $1,050. With the median household income in America of $48,200, these cost increases tear a hole in the budget that is almost impossible to close. So it is no surprise, Professor Warren said, that millions of families have turned to debt to try to bridge the gap between their incomes and their expenses. Debt of every kind has increased sharply. Much of that debt was mortgage debt, driven upward by rising prices for homes. But refinancing and home equity lines of credit were also used to pay off credit cards, to pay for college, and to finance medical bills. Those debts must now all be repaid, or families will lose their homes. The difficulties facing families who are unable to pay their mortgages and home equity lines of credit have grabbed all the headlines. But families are struggling with credit card debt, car payments, student loans, and payday loans. Debts must be repaid, and that is more money out of tomorrow's budget. Worse yet, debts represent an additional expense as future income goes to interest payments, fees, and penalties, money that simply evaporates from their paychecks. Credit cards provide one example of the stress for middle-class families. Year after year, credit cards have generated record-breaking profits. Their revenues have increased substantially. In 2007, all-purpose cards have generated $117 billion, up from $115 billion in 2006, and up from $110 billion in 2005. The breakdown in card income shows that most money comes from those customers who cannot pay in full each month. If you are just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. And in this segment of the show, we're going over the testimony of Professor Elizabeth Warren to Congress. The topic is, how much more can consumers be squeezed by stagnant income, skyrocketing housing costs, and falling home prices? So we just said that credit cards provide one example of the stress for middle-class American families. About 43.5% of all households in the U.S. carry a balance on their credit cards. For those who carry debt, the average debt per household in 2006 was reported as an astonishing $8,467. Since then, debt has continued to grow. A household earning the median income would have to turn over every paycheck for nearly 3 months to pay that bill. And of course, Professor Warren points out that money spent to service debt is money not spent to buy goods and services. Credit card debt now consumes a sizable portion of a family's income, leaving families with less to spend elsewhere. Currently, nearly 10% of the total disposable income in the U.S. is committed to revolving debt. In effect, a huge wealth transfer is taking place. Families, stretched thin by rising costs for food, gasoline, and healthcare, turn to credit cards to make it to the end of the month. An unexpected expense, a medical emergency, a cutback in hours, can send the debt load spiraling. Over time, as expenses keep rising, families pay off a little less and their debt balances grow. Credit issuers take a bigger and bigger bite of each paycheck as interest and fee revenues keep expanding. The news is good for the credit card companies, with year after year of record-breaking profits, but it is bad for the families generating those profits. So what we see is that families are caught in a spiral of lower incomes, higher expenses, and a debt load that must be paid with interest and fees. The income, expense, and debt numbers are particularly disturbing because economists tell us that the boom is over, the economy is heading towards recession. In past years, families got ahead during boom times so that they hit recessions with some cushion. But the boom of the early 2000s bypassed family workers, and leaving them in a deeper hole at the end of the cycle than they were at the beginning. This time around, boom times made the rich richer, but ordinary working people got poorer, and that will make the coming hard times even harder. Professor Warren says that the wave of mortgage foreclosures is the first sign of extraordinary stress on the middle class. But there are signs of more trouble to come. Spiraling debt loads signal future economic stress with no obvious exit strategy in sight. If household earnings continue to decline, households are caught between decreasing consumption and defaulting on their loans. Both have significantly negative effects on the economy, and both exert additional downward pressure on job opportunities and wages. In short, as the middle class weakens, the economy weakens, creating a downward cycle. So unfortunately, anxiety has become a constant companion for Americans struggling with rising costs and stagnating incomes. Families have cut the fat out of their budget. Now they are cutting bone. Last year, 18% of Americans did not seek needed medical treatment because of the cost, and 17% did not have prescriptions filled because they could not pay. Today, about one in every seven families is dealing with a debt collector. 40% of families worry whether they can make all their payments every month. In 2006, a then record 1.3 million families received foreclosure notices, followed by another 2.2 million families who were in foreclosure in 2007. At the current rate of foreclosures, there will be about 3 million in the year 2008. Americans are optimistic by nature, but their future is not looking bright. Of those lucky enough to have health insurance, 27% are worried that they could not afford a major hospital stay. 40% worry about how they will pay for college for their children, and 58% say they are not saving enough for retirement. One in five Americans is losing hope, saying that even when they don't count their mortgages, they expect to die still owing money to their creditors. 7 years of flat or declining wages, 7 years of increasing costs, and 7 years of mounting debts have placed unprecedented stress on the ordinary families. By every critical financial measure, these families are losing ground. Without changes in critical economic policies, the strong middle class that has been the backbone of the American economy and the American democracy is in jeopardy, and this is all based on the testimony, expertise, facts, and research of Professor Warren. So this is a rather grim picture of what has happened in the last 7 years in our economy and some of the dangers on the horizon right now. However, the purpose of this show is also to help you to understand how to get out of these problems, to deal with it immediately in the short term and in the long term by taking control of your situation and by creating some balance to offset those principles in activity that caused these problems, those things that you can control. So we will review what was new last week, and you can always go to www.liptaclaw.com/life-and-debt for the archives of these shows. And in recapping, I discussed the overall equation of getting your disposable net income to represent your spending of 50% of that disposable net income for your bare necessities, 20% for savings, and 30% for wants, and really focusing greatly on your bare necessities or those must-haves. And with that in mind, making an effort to increase your worth. Now, I've mentioned that it is a task, it takes effort, and is challenging because you need to wrestle with some tough choices, all of which we've discussed in those prior shows. But it is possible because you do have options. And from those options, you pursue the ones that work best for you. You can use your intelligence and your creativity to improve your future financially. You may need to create significant change, and with a bit of attention and effort, it will pay off, and the result of getting your bare necessities or must-haves in order is a future of worry-free living and wealth creation. You will be paying your bills without worry, enjoying some fun money, growing in many life-supporting ways, and you will be happy because we've now dealt with your bare necessities. And we then looked last week at the concept of having some fun. How you define fun, I said, is personal, but you have to have some fun in your life because fun is a universal need, but you need to have some resources to do that. We are looking at a long-term lifetime plan, balancing your money for life and enjoying along the way. And if you don't have enough money for some fun, then really you're not capable to enjoy the rest of your life, and you really can't afford the rest of your life. Building wealth and having money to enjoy go hand in hand on the path. So we talked about your wants spending, and we're not so concerned about what you spend your money on as with the bare necessities element of the equation, but how you spend your money. And as I mentioned before, the main points are you have to set a clear limit, how much money is available for fun. This is the relaxed area because properly understood, you know the formula. All you need to look at is your bare necessities, that amount plus the 20% of your savings. You put those two categories together and you minus it from your disposable monthly income. And that's how much money that you have. The rest is for your wants, to spend as you desire. So that's the first thing, to set that understanding, that limit of what you can spend for wants. And the second is to shift to a cash basis, to stay away from credit cards, and also to be careful with some debit cards that have traps associated with them. If you are just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I am speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. The next thing we want to do is a self-test. So get your paper and pen and see how well you do to set your limits regarding your wants. You may have some money out there, hopefully you do, but let's see if you are using that money wisely. Now, this is a simple true or false audit, and all I want you to do is to respond to the following statements. True or false, I can't resist buying certain things. True or false, I charge things on several different credit cards. True or false, it's hard to keep track of how much is in the bank. True or false, When I go out, I usually end up spending more than I planned. True or false, when my credit card bill arrives, I am always shocked by how big it is. True or false, I can never make it through the holidays without spending a lot of money. True or false, sometimes I buy things, but when I get them home, I think I can't really afford this. True or false, I don't really want to add up how much I spend. I think I'd rather not know. And the last, true or false, I usually buy what I want, even if I am not sure I can afford it. Now let's tally up your trues and your falses and see what you came up with. Now this audit is designed to give really a quick snapshot of whether you struggle with setting limits over your wants money. If you responded to two or more statements with true, you would benefit from putting some tighter controls on your fund spending. Now, if you marked true for four or more statements, this should serve as a loud wake-up call that you are on a spending binge that is undermining your financial health and, in all likelihood, your happiness. So tally it up and then think about it, review it, and make some changes based on what you are looking at there, the results that you came up with. The next thing we want to talk about is point number two, the shift to cash. This is a very critical and important psychological and practical point that needs to be addressed. If we actually look at using credit cards as if it was our savings account and just frequently, regularly throwing down the plastic, we're shocked when the bill comes later on at how much we spent on these things that we felt we wanted. We go to the dry cleaners, we go out to some recreational activity and use the plastic, we get food, we go and get books, we may get repairs made, go out to a movie, buy some clothes, maybe do some repairs on appliances that we have, get some kind of accessory like sunglasses, maybe get a window unit, air conditioner for the house, haircuts, etc., etc. And suddenly we are shocked when we get the bill and see that, well, we've spent over $1,000 just doing those few things that I mentioned, and that is not an unusual example. That's with plastic, and with that plastic, what's going to happen is, of course, that we will have interest, and that interest, if we can't pay that $1,000 off in the month, will take a sharp bite into our yearly income, and if we can't pay it on time, then there will be a higher rate of interest that we'll have to pay, and also there are possibly late penalties and eventually the result of totally defaulting on that credit card account, which leads to lawsuits and money judgments and garnishments and levying on our bank accounts and possibly bankruptcy. So credit card usage is a dangerous thing. We think of it somehow it's been contorted in our thinking that a credit card is as if savings money. It's not savings money at all. It is just the opposite. It is debt and nothing but debt, and really burdensome debt that we will have a difficult time coping with, particularly if we have multiple credit cards that we're doing this with. One problem is that when we use the credit card, it is difficult to keep track while we're spending, not so much later. Is actually a good way to have records because they'll send you a statement. But before you get that statement and from transaction to transaction, you have no clue during the month what you have spent your credit card money on. And this is just totally eating up your wants category and going far beyond it. As Professor Warren says, unless you pull out a notebook and calculator every time you lay down a credit card, you will always be a little vague on how much you spent. No kidding. Money is money, but it does matter how you pay. Credit cards, checks, debit cards, cash, the method of payment does make a difference. Credit cards make overspending exceedingly easy. They are an open invitation for trouble, truthfully. Even a credit card with a very low limit won't keep you safe nowadays because credit card companies routinely let you charge more than your limit allows just so they can hit you with over-the-limit fees at the end of the month. And eventually, that's just going to metamorphize into late fees and higher interest rates, and then eventually a default. In short, take it from an attorney. Credit card accounts can be very, very complicated contracts. We've talked about this before. You don't really know what you're spending and how you're being charged for what you're spending from month to month. They make your financial life much more complex, and that ultimately leads to a lot of stress. We want to keep it simple, and this is really one way to keep it complicated. There's actually an intent here by the lender, the credit card companies, to keep you in the dark and to keep you always guessing and really trick you, if you look at it carefully, into making a mistake, because it's through those errors, those mistakes, that in fact they make the most money. And it's interesting to note that many of these credit card companies aren't pushing their own money. They're servicers pushing someone else's money that the credit card company itself is not responsible for. So just like with the mortgages, the credit card companies sell off their debt, and that debt is someone else's concern. The credit card company's concern is mostly just servicing the account and getting you to spend more of someone else's money. And then, of course, putting you in the dark so you don't really know what you're doing, and seducing you to spend all kinds of money on these special offers that they're consistently sending to us with these convenience checks and short-term, low-interest or no-interest periods. All of these things are really pulling the wool over your eyes to give them more money in the short run and ultimately in the long run. Lots of debt will be owed to them for the servicing. Credit cards turn out to be unbelievably, ridiculously expensive. You're working hard to get your money in balance. You have really no business wasting money on these cards with annual fees, late fees, interest charges, just to spend really your own money. That's not very intelligent. That's not very wise use of your own money. It's like throwing your money into a credit card pit. And even if you're the kind of person who is what the credit card companies call a deadbeat, you don't pay an annual fee, you don't carry a balance on your credit card, it doesn't cost you anything, that really doesn't mean that you're not part of their plan. In fact, credit card companies count on the fact that even people like you will make mistakes. A few years ago, they figured out that they could boost profits by dinging people with more fees, late fees, minimum finance fees, sent it to the wrong address fees, returned check fees, and any other fee they could think of. And it works. The credit card companies will rack up more than $100 billion in fees, interest, and other charges every year, and that's about $900 per household. So give yourself an instant tax cut. Don't use credit cards. And the final tip for the week, if you have any money judgments against you, your property, including wages, bank accounts, personal property such as household goods and vehicles, and even in some cases real estate, are subject to execution, which are garnishments, levies, attachments, and sales, depending on where you live and what the exemption laws are in your state and locality. You need to be very careful and should seek competent legal advice to help you understand both your risks and your rights if you have money judgments. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. May you enjoy and have a healthy and prosperous, debt manageable life.